Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf here and Gavin Shaw, and joined by a very special guest today. We are finally, I know some places have gotten into it earlier. We usually like to try to keep it a little more centralized to the draft itself, but we are finally getting into our draft coverage today. And we brought on a very special guest, Spencer Perlman, who is a draft writer at The Stepien. You might know him on Twitter as @SKPerlman. And he previously consulted for the Suns on last year's NBA draft. So he gives us an inside look at a number of prospects starting today.
Yes, immediately Spencer puts this draft in stark contrast, potentially in his mind, the worst draft in the last 15 years. But that doesn't mean it isn't chock full of talented role players and some potential high level talents on top. We go over the top two point guards, LaMelo Ball, Killian Hayes, who may or may not be Spencer's top two players overall. And then a big time sleeper for his number three, a guy, Alex, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any other draft Nick put in his top three. So that's a surprise for everyone. We'll say that. And a guy who happens to be an incredible fit on the Knicks if he ends up being as good as Spencer thinks he will be. I'm not going to talk about it anymore because I will inevitably reveal who it is. You're just going to have to listen and find out. All that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ brings the Knicks to the
rim! What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam across the lane, Knox foul from behind, count it, and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here to bring you guys into one of our first true draft episodes. And for that, we couldn't bring on anybody different than Spencer Perlman, who is a draft writer at The Stepien, which is one of my favorite draft sites, and previously consulted for the Suns for last year's NBA draft. Spencer, how are you doing? And how's life for you right now, honestly?
Life's good. I'm good. How are you guys?
Short, sweet, to the point.
Great. Yeah.
I'm doing all right. I can't really complain. You know, just living life in suburbia as usual. My state's trying to reopen, which should be interesting over the next few weeks. But I don't see it going particularly well. But maybe that's just the pessimist in me. But otherwise, doing okay. Glad to hear you're doing well as well. I figure we should just jump right in because we got a bunch to talk about. To let everybody listening know, we sort of wanted to treat that. We haven't done too much in the way of draft coverage because we usually try to do it more in an immediate lead up to the draft. But unfortunately, this year that's kind of been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And now it seems like the draft lottery is going to be end of August and the actual draft itself is going to be in October. So we still got a ways to go. So we got to get to this draft coverage at some point. So we figured we'd get started, and we're going to treat this as sort of a primer episode today. We're going to hopefully touch on a lot of different prospects and a lot of different questions. Spencer, I think first though, we wanted to just things. First off, this draft has been, I mean, everywhere you look, you see that it's considered one of the weaker drafts in recent memory, at least as far as star power is concerned. There's no clear-cut top prospects. Everybody seems to have their own opinion on who is, you know, worthy of even being taken at number one, who would be worthy of taking in the Knicks range, especially, which is presumably in the 6-7-8 range if the odds play out the way that, you know, the majority of the odds say that they will. So just to put things in context, like, what would you say this is the worst draft since? But also, in a way, is it sort of decent for the Knicks because there's, of all the players towards the top, it seems to be pretty guard and mostly point guard heavy, which has been the Knicks' need for the last, I don't know, 20 years or so.
So I'm actually going through Basketball Reference right now, trying to figure that out. And
I stopped for a second in like the early 2010s, and somehow I'm now at 2006, and I think it's the worst draft potentially since 2006.
And that was the Bargnani number one overall draft, yeah?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah, I'll always remember that one. That was definitely a weird draft. Man, yeah, that's saying something if it's the worst
just,
draft.
Just for context on that, the Ringer did a 2006 redraftables the other day, and Steve Novak went in the lottery. So who knew, nice player, obviously. No shots at Steve, but good context. Yeah, I thought you were maybe going to go 2013. And obviously, I mean, I guess the question is sort of implies like what was the perception going into the draft. But you can even look at the end result of that one and just say Giannis alone makes that draft palatable, even if a lot of the other guys didn't really turn out.
Yeah, so that was actually the one that I thought about, but then actually going through it, like, I mean, I guess at the time, like, nobody knew Victor Oladipo was going to be Victor Oladipo. No one knew, you know, Giannis was going to be Giannis or anything like
Rudy
that.
Rudy Gobert's there.
Yeah, Rudy's end of the first round, but, like, even in between, like, Otto Porter, still very good. Cody Zeller, when he's healthy, still good. KCP has turned into a really good 3-and-D guy. Ben McLemore finally broke out of his, you know, game slump, I guess. McCollum would be like a top, you know, it would be him or LaMelo, and it would be Oladipo or LaMelo, and then after that it just kind of it would sink a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess, Alex, I know when we were sort of going through this pre-show, I mean, you were noting to me, and you just mentioned point guards, but the consensus also seems to be that this is a somewhat deep draft. And I always wonder, like, when people say that, I'm like, all right, but do you just mean because, like, every player, like, outside of the top five, like, maybe projects as, like, a pretty good role player, and you're sort of, like, misinterpreting that as deep when in a normal draft those guys would just go a little bit later on? Or Spencer, is this genuinely a deep draft for guys who could potentially have long NBA careers at the back of rotations or as high-level starters?
Yeah, I think it's a legitimately like deep draft. It's flat, I guess you could say, in that after, you know, the top 7 to 10 picks, it just kind of like levels off. Obviously, you're not going from like, you know, if you're grading on a scale like a 7 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10 at the end of the first round, but the band from, you know, low end starter to role player is much thinner than I think it usually is.
I mean, what do you think? I think I already know what the answer is, but who is your number one prospect going into this draft? Or actually, why don't you just like, who's like your top three right now?
Yeah. So LaMelo is my number one. Killian right now is my number two. And he's, I guess, he's kind of trended up a little bit. Like, he was initially my number one back in November. Then it was him and LaMelo tied in the first tier, and then I pushed LaMelo a little bit ahead. And then number three, it's tied between Anthony Edwards and Alexei Pokusevski.
I guess, I mean, there's a number of different questions we could go with off of that. And Pokusevski's a guy I really want to talk to you about because obviously you have him quite a bit higher than it seems like the draft intelligentsia consensus on him. But I kind of wanted to start with Killian Hayes because he was the dude. And I think this is purely from like lack of research and tape watching myself. But I haven't totally understood the appeal of as a top five pick, just because I mean, again, just in terms of like pure like flash skills and like what you normally look for in a top five NBA pick, he doesn't totally jump off the tape to me. Obviously, a guy who's considered an extremely high level passer, a pretty good ball handler, seems to have some potential as a shooter. But I guess where I want to head with that is who do you think like his NBA comp is, and why in your mind is he theoretically in the running for your number one prospect?
So I actually haven't been able to kind of nail down to comparison, and like I hate comparisons to begin with because,
yeah,
I mean, you know, the NBA draft whole thing, Adam Morrison, Larry Bird, and Deshaun Stevenson, Michael Jordan, like all that crap. So I don't really, I'm not a huge fan, I guess, of making like one-to-one comparisons, but in terms of style, like he's very similar to Manu and Harden. And I know that's a cop-out because they're both very left-hand dominant players. But in terms of, like, their finishing ability in the paint, all three of them have it. Their ability to go to sidesteps, step backs, and have near-perfect footwork is like right there, their ability to throw live action passes with their left hand, and also their inability to do it with their right hand. You know, their left hand dominance in the paint. Also, there are just a lot of similarities. Now, I think he'll reach, you know, peak Ginobili, who is just below, I guess, maybe like, you know, an MVP-ish candidate? No. Or Harden level, who is obviously a former MVP player? No. But I can easily see Killian being like a legitimately good, like, you know, he'd be an all-star player. And he'd have two-way impact because he's a smart defender. He's got some size, which gives him some positional versatility. And, you know, offense, he's got the footwork on all, pretty much every off-the-bounce shot you'd want, similar to Anthony Edwards. Can finish in the paint really well, can pass really well with his left hand. The issue with him, of course, is that he does not shoot well on catch-and-shoot attempts. And after digging into his shots, actually, again, a couple days ago, I realized that I think the entire issue there is just his footwork. He does not look comfortable at all catching and shooting. Because you see, like, hesitation with his feet. Instead of it being a 1-2, it's like, you know, he'll catch it, he'll bring his foot in a little bit, and then he'll bring it in a little bit more. There's no smooth transition. But, I mean, Killian, I think, he's a pretty safe player. That he's going to be, he should be a starter at the very least. And if he reaches his peak, he's probably not going to be a major usage guy, but I think he'll definitely be a two-way player. And, you know, in the draft that kind of doesn't really have many high-potential guys, having someone with a good enough potential and a high floor, I think it's definitely a player you take high.
Do you see him as a natural fit on the Knicks, just given the fact that, I mean, he's one of the few dudes who is projected at this level that in this draft that isn't necessarily a ball dominant guy, and maybe even more so than LaMelo, at least like his shot. I know obviously he hasn't been a great 3-point shooter yet, but his form looks a little bit more ironed out. Do you think, just in terms of fit, he's one of the guys that could go in the top like 5 to 7 that makes the most sense on the Knicks?
Yeah, I think he fits really well.
Do you think, okay, speaking of fit, I mean, I know that the Knicks are in no position to draft for fit. I think it's been pretty, the only way that I could potentially see them drafting for fit over just best player available is potentially in a Wiseman or Okongwu scenario, because they already have Mitchell Robinson in tow, who's like the one sure thing traditional center, you know, on their team already. And that's not a position you can really have more than one of and expect huge minutes out of at this point in the NBA. But the thing with Hayes is that, you know, you kind of noted it there. He's very, he's a lefty and he's very strong with his left hand, but needs to do some work on his right. And that sounds a lot to me like RJ Barrett from a year ago, and the Knicks also have Julius Randle operating on the left side of the floor. Do you think that there's potential issues there with having three players that are so left-hand dominant, even though I think we saw, I was surprised by how good RJ was with his right last year, and I'm sure he'll only get better, but ultimately he is a lefty who's going to predominantly want to go left, and Julius Randle almost always goes to the left side of the floor. Do you see any potential issues there if the Knicks would end up with Killian?
I mean, I don't really think so. I think it'd be pretty rare that you actually have all three guys on the same side of the court at the same time. So, you know, especially with, you know, with Killian and Randall, it'd probably just be, you know, a side pick and roll. And, like, so they're probably going to force the middle. But if they force Killian middle, he still has that step back down, like Pat. He has the side step down Pat. I mean, I don't know, like, I always kind of thought it was a little bit more difficult also to play against lefties, just because most of the time you play against righties. And when you have three guys who are only going left, you kind of need to change your defensive scheme a little bit in order to fit that. So in some ways, it also could make it a little bit easier, but that's also probably me just overthinking. But in, like, the left-hand dominance thing, though, so, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm going over everyone's shots again because, you know, we have 4 months until the draft. What else am I going to be doing? As few times as Killian goes right, Halliburton is the exact same thing, only more so going left. And it's rare that people actually point out issues, stuff like that with right-hand dominant players. But like, I know people love Halliburton because he can make the passes and, you know, he's a good team defender and all that stuff, but he also has no in-between game and he literally has no left hand. His two left-hand finishes this past year were both on tip-ins. That's it. Anyways, sorry, that was a little tangent.
No, it's fine because we're going to get to Halliburton at some point anyway, so it's better to start, you know, this is sort of a wide net we're casting here talking about these guys. I figure we could divert to LaMelo real quick. I mean, I think it should be noted. I mean, I realize I haven't addressed this yet to this point in the show, but for anybody that's not familiar, the Knicks, as it stands, are at the number six odds in the lottery, which under the new lottery system gives them a 37.2% chance to land in the top four. Only actually an 8.6% chance of staying at their spot at six. So surprisingly, one of the lowest odds that they have is actually staying where their lottery spot dictates. They have a 50.4% chance to land at 7 or 8 and a 3.8% chance to land at 9 or 10. It should be noted the chance to land at 10 is like 0.1 or something like that. So that's pretty unlikely that they'll get that far down. But Spencer, I mean, that does mean that they do have, you know, almost a 40% chance of getting into the top four, which would potentially put them in LaMelo Ball territory. It seems like, based off reporting so far and based off comments that he's made, that LaVar Ball, the very outspoken father of the Ball children, is trying to push LaMelo towards the Knicks. LaMelo has also done various social media shenanigans and wardrobe shenanigans to suggest that he wants to come to the Knicks, like wearing orange and blue when he went out to some games before quarantine started. He's made some, like, I think Instagram posts showing him in a Knicks jersey in 2K next to RJ Barrett and stuff like that. All kinds of little things. So there is, I think, no matter where the Knicks end up, a pretty decent chance that they wind up, even if they're not able to draft him at their spot, potentially making a foray to trading for LaMelo Ball. So I think it's important to look into him quite a bit. I know you're super, super high on his ball handling and passing ability to the point where it's like maybe, like, not just for this draft, but in the last number of drafts, one of the better pure playmakers that there has been. What do you just tell me a little bit about that, even though I kind of know how you stand on that already.
Yeah, he's in there with that Luka and Trey. You know, those guys in terms of passing ability, except I'd probably have him a little bit above Trey just because those 5 inches in height matters in terms of seeing the court. But like, he can literally make every pass in the book everywhere in the court. And, you know, whether it's a live action pass, you know, driving hard right to the opposite corner, doing the same from the opposite side, going left to the opposite corner, making quick reads where, you know, if they're running a pick and roll at the top of the key, if he sees the defender blitz, he's not waiting for him to get there. He's, you know, hitting them with a behind the back pass or just an over the shoulder pass, something, making sure that the look is there quickly. And he also has some, like, I mean, he doesn't showboat, he's flashy. No, I'm sure everyone's kind of seen the through the legs pass that he had in the pick and roll. You know, he's going right and he passed it between, I think it was his legs and the defender's legs, which was pretty insane. But for someone who handles also as much as him and who faced the pressure that he faced game in, game out, being like, you know, him and Aaron Brooks, and Aaron Brooks went down, so it was pretty much the LaMelo Ball show, facing as much pressure as he did not turn over the ball very much, which is another really good sign. But the passing ability, you could just go to YouTube, type in LaMelo Ball passing, and I'm sure you could come up with, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of hits that are just, like, you know, at least 10 minutes long.
The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit LockedOnPodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. That's LockedOnPodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. Let me tell you about the most useful app on my phone. It's so damn hard to find the time to sit down and read. I try. I have all the time in the world. It's quarantine. What am I doing with my day? I'm not reading. But what I am doing is using an incredible app that solves the problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is quite unique, and it works really well on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, they're successful, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never quite had the time to. Alex, I'm currently I'm house sitting in the suburbs. I've spent 95% of this quarantine in New York City, where I have not been able to go outside. I'm hesitant to take long walks. I'm currently in a relatively empty suburb of Washington, D.C., and with that comes the ability I get to take these two dogs that I'm house-sitting for on some really nice long walks. There is a basketball hoop in my backyard. I can spend hours and hours shooting around. And I more than just getting my heart rate up a little bit and maintaining my sanity, I'd love to learn a thing or two. And that's where Blinkist is so, so good. While you're doing these otherwise mindless activities that are good for you, but ultimately you don't learn a lot from, I can just sort of pick out like a top nonfiction book and really dive deep on it. Right now I'm going through Tiger Woods by Jeff Benedict. A really good profile on again, just one of the all-time talents in any sport of all time. And I've always maybe it's part of the reason I love the NBA so much. I always had like kind of like a fascination with prodigies. The Knicks just hired one in the scouting world, and Alex Klein. And Tiger Woods is sort of like, along with LeBron James, kind of the ultimate example of someone who was always destined for greatness and actually lived up to the hype. So check out Tiger Woods by Jeff Benedict on Blinkist. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/MBA. Try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial, and you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA.
Let me tell you a little bit about RockAuto.com. So with the ever-increasing number of makes, you know, Fiat, Kia, etc., and models, you got the Pacificas, the XT5s, you got the X3, you got the Forester, that's what I drive. It's now impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. You know, often auto parts stores are not the biggest stores on the planet. Why endure the often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning from salespeople at the, you know, at the counter of your local auto parts store, and, you know, then dealing with them only ordering the parts that they stock from their brands that often cost more money for you? But you don't know any better. I mean, you can't sit there and see their computer. You're just getting what they're ordering for you from their warehouse. So you have to assume that they're looking out for your best interest, which often they're not. Why would you do that? You guys have computers now. You know, we live in 2020. You have access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket on your smartphone. I don't see any reason to go to those stores anymore. RockAuto.com has everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet for your car. Whether it's for your classic car that you're working on or your daily driver, you can get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And the best part is that the RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specs, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and they're the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Very important, guys. If you go into an auto parts store and, you know, you're just Joe Schmo like me, then they're going to charge you a higher price than they would charge their mechanic buddy that comes in all the time, which, you know, it just isn't quite fair, man. I mean, we're all trying to get the same parts. They should be the same price no matter what. So why would you spend up to twice as much for the same parts going to a brick and mortar store when you could just go to rockauto.com? If you go to rockauto.com right now, check out all the parts available for your car or truck. As I said, I drive a Subaru Forester. I've already been checking out the inventory. Might do a few little at-home upgrades with all this at-home time right now, because why not? And if you go there, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com.
All right, and then I guess this is switching gears, but can you tell us a little bit about Alexei Pokusevsky? Because he was a guy I really hadn't heard all that much about. I know on the Athletics mock draft, they have him like all the way back at 26 to the Celtics. You're obviously way, way higher on him. What's your gauge on where he'd actually go? And I mean, clearly, I think you said you have him at fourth. Where would you take him in the draft?
I would take him as high as three. yeah, in terms of where teams have him, I mean, I'd be kind of surprised if any team had him, I guess, below the lottery. The way I kind of have my board structured specifically with him is that, so he's the youngest player in the draft. He is arguably the most talented overall in terms of what he can do on offense and defense, being, you know, the position that he is. It's incredible. You know, he can pass. He's a legit movement shooter at 6'11", someone who moves like he's 6'6". He uses his length well in the paint. He doesn't really play particularly big, but he does play above his listed weight. And admittedly, he has to get stronger. But like, if you're going to, if you have a high pick in the draft, and if, you know, if your options are between him and, you know, Wiseman or Cole or whoever, and if you trust your development staff, I don't see why you would take like pretty much anyone else above him. You just need to, I guess, be a little bit patient with him because he still is only 18. He still has to get a little bit stronger. But like, if you're going to take a risk on a draft, if you're going to take a risk in this draft, or I guess in any draft, this would be the draft to take the risk in, because there's so few super high potential guys, and he would be the guy to take the risk on because his ceiling is just like that absurd.
Obviously super, super young. As a shooter last year, I'm looking at your article on him now, hit just under 33% of his shots from three. Where do you see him topping out as a shooter? And is that sort of like, I know you mentioned you don't like doing player comps, but is that where you see his best case scenario as a spacer who can sort of like leverage that into driving and like being sort of a playmaker at like that insane height? Or like, where do you see him? Like, I guess like if he ends up on the Knicks, he's just on paper. I mean, which is why, I mean, in an ideal world, I just would have loved to have gotten to see, even for a season, the Kristaps Porzingis Mitchell Robinson pairing. Cause I just thought having two guys who could potentially be rim protectors, someone in Robinson who could theoretically defend on the perimeter a little bit. And I guess just the idea of having four high level shooters around Mitchell Robinson, like, I feel like, I mean, the guy in his second year set a field all time efficiency record with terrible spacing. Like, I don't really get how you would guard it. So I guess what I'm asking is, do you see those two as sort of an ideal fit? And do you think Pokusevsky could reach a level as a shooter where that would really hit its maximum potential?
Yeah, so I definitely think they're a fit. As you said, you know, Mitch did what he did and finished everything in the paint despite having no room to do so. So if you give him a little bit more room, that should help a good amount, which is crazy. And like, even if it doesn't help him specifically, it would help the rest of the spacing on the court, because instead of having, you know, Julius Randle staying, you know, where Julius Randle stays, which I guess is turning the ball over in the paint, Portis yeah. living from mid-range, and, you know, RJ kind of living in the paint also, you'll have a legit spacer, and not only like a shooting guard or a guard who, or wing who primarily plays on the perimeter, he's going to be dragging the big men out to guard him also, which then opens up more space for the drives. So I think he's a great fit with Mitch, and I think he's a great fit with pretty much anyone on this team. And what was the second question. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I threw a lot out there. I guess like, where do you see him topping out as a shooter? Is he someone at least early in his career that teams are just going to throw like small ball fours on and just sort of challenge him to shoot over them, or how do you see that playing out?
That's probably what they'll do. Although, like, unless if you really have a small ball four who's really a three, you know, like a Paul George playing up or Kawhi playing up, or I mean, I don't know, pick whoever, like Marcus Smart would probably be able to defend him pretty well because he's just so strong and he's got long arms. The way he moves is not normal for someone his size or someone within like 2 to 3 inches at his size. Like, you don't see a guy 6'7" or 6'8" moving like someone who, you know, like Poku, who's 6'11", 7 feet. So yeah, like they probably put someone smaller on him, but at the same time, if you do that, Poku has the ability to also handle the ball as the pick and roll ball handler. And, you know, if you do that, then if the ball handler goes over the screen, then he has an open shot in front. If they go under the screen, he has an open shot from behind. And then if they switch, then all right, now you have a big man on Poku, and then you have whoever was guarding Poku on the screener, which obviously opens up a whole bunch of other issues for him.
I'm liking him on the Knicks. So I wasn't even thinking about it for the Knicks, Alex. But now Spencer, talk me into it.
Well, this actually brings me to something that I was going to bring up a little bit later on, but I'll bring up now. Given how deep this draft is, I think there's a decent chance that, you know, I'm going to say the 27 pick, the Clippers pick, which is still, you know, it's mobile for if or when the season restarts, that might go up or down a spot or two. And the 38th pick from the Hornets, those two could potentially carry a little more weight for trading up this year. But the Knicks also have a pretty stacked, you know, catalog of picks going into the next couple years. So, Spencer, I'm curious, like, if there was a chance, like, let's say the Knicks luck out and they can get, or even if they don't luck out, you know, whatever, let's say that they hold at six and they're able to draft, I don't know, Halliburton or something. And then, or whoever else, whatever the case may be, they draft, you know, probably a guard in the, you know, with their top pick, whatever, wherever that pick ends up landing. And then they get an opportunity, let's say, you know, the Poku drops to, let's say, 14 or something like that, like right to the back end of the lottery. What would be the maximum that you'd be willing to start looking at giving up to move up for someone like him this year, given that he's sort of one of the intriguing high ceiling players that, you know, that there doesn't seem to be a ton of in this draft, even though there's definitely a case to be made that, like, because of his frame and potential weight issues, there is definitely a, you know, a high bust potential, but there's also huge boom potential if he's able to fill himself out and, you know, get an NBA body on him with the skills that he already has. I would imagine that any deal would start with that Clippers pick and the Hornets second round pick, but, like, the Knicks also have the Mavericks first round pick for next year. They have their own and the Pistons second round pick for next year and what's supposed to be a very talented draft. They have the Mavs top 10 protected 2023 first round pick, which would turn into 2 seconds if it doesn't convey. And then I think that's basically it for extra picks. And then obviously all their own picks. I mean, what's something that you would start entertaining to potentially trade up for him?
So in regards to the weight, I don't really think he's ever going to, first of all, you don't want him to play at 240 or 250, because if you're doing that, you're doing something wrong. You want to play him as a movement for someone who, so you want him to be light in his feet and stuff like that. I think he can actually get to 220 pretty easily. His calves are actually, they're not thin for someone his weight. So I think he'll actually be able to get there and not really have it impact the way he moves or, you know, make him more injury prone or anything like that. But in terms of giving up, like, I would absolutely trade, you know, the Clippers pick this year. I would give up the late first round pick this year. You know, their second round pick this year from the Hornets. And then if you have to give the Mavericks pick, you know, maybe not next year. Actually, I guess I'd prefer to give it next year, because then the year after that, you're going to have a high school and then the incoming freshman also. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine giving up the Mavericks pick next year. Like, I would try to see if, you know, maybe two of those three would happen. And if not, all three of those for, you know, the rights to draft Poku and then maybe a potential like second round pick or something like that. But if you're able to go up and get him without, you know, trading away every first round pick or trading a whole bunch of them or, you know, getting rid of a lot of the assets, I would do it. I would, you know, I would trade Knox, the Clippers pick and the second round pick this year to do it. I don't know if any team would bite on that though. I just think there's so much, like, obviously Poku's ultimate potential is pretty insane, but I think even his realistic potential is pretty nuts. And that if he's a movement shooter who can like actually run some pick and roll and attack off the dribble as he's running off screens, how many players in the NBA can do that? Like, you know, Davis Bertans is 6 foot, whatever, 6 foot 10, but he's not the passer of Poku. He's not even close. So if you get to like 80% outcome of Bertans as a shooter, and then you add on, you know, I don't know, like 80% of Jokic or 75% of Jokic, whatever. Like that's a really, really special player. And I don't think it's that crazy for him to get there.
I feel like you're almost talking me into like, I'm kind of surprised he's not number one for you, Spencer, after hearing all that.
Yeah. It's just because I think it's much easier to be an impact player when you're a guard.
Yeah.
Like otherwise, you know, if LaMelo weren't in this draft and if Killian weren't in this draft, I'd have Poku. I think Poku has the highest ultimate ceiling in the draft. And I think his realistic ceiling is also up there, but you're not running an offense through him, which limits how much impact he'll actually have on the game.
All right, that's where we're going to cut it off for today. You know, Spencer was kind enough to come on and give us a lot of his time and enlighten us on so many prospects. So we got through sort of Spencer's top tier of prospects today, and we're going to get into the best of the rest tomorrow, breaking down some of the late lottery players and what Spencer thinks of them, like Obi Toppin, Denny Avdija, Cole Anthony, Kyra Lewis, guys like that. And then we'll get into some of Spencer's favorites that could potentially be in the late first round, early second round, where the Knicks, of course, have two picks. So we will get into all that tomorrow on Locked On Knicks.